All right, so what we were doing last time, and we had to go, there was a bit of stuff missed, a few holes over there, and we're going to move on. So we were talking about, because we mentioned that the flow of the parsha was this, Benos Tzlafchad, the daughters of Tzlafchad, which came after the dividing of the land. And we all understand that that means that they are about to enter the land, which means that it's about time that Moshe Rabbeinu will be passing away because he's not permitted to enter the land. And we know this, so this is the end of the 40 years in the desert. And as we said, after Hashem gave Moshe specific instructions what to do with the daughters of Tzlafchad, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu, in him, it stirred a concept of inheritance. And he started to wonder, who's going to take over after me? And as we know, as a normal parent, he wanted his son to take over after him. But we all know that that's not what happened. Hashem chose Yehoshua, Moshe Rabbeinu's devoted, loyal student, to take over after Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's like the undercurrent of what happens here. But as we saw in the Psukim, some beautiful, beautiful things came through, how Moshe Rabbeinu is extremely concerned about leaving, and the way he says it, his people, as a flock without a shepherd, and he's concerned about them. He wants the best for them. And I just want to show you inside. So we're going to just look at the pasuk. I'll tell you which pasuk to look at. Let me just find it in here. And I'll show you which pasuk to see. And we'll see a little more. I want to see which one says share. Here we go. Sorry about that. Okay. So we're in, as we know, in Parashas Pinchas. It is in chapter 27. And in, let me just see, where are we? So if you look at page number, I remember we said this was so unusual because here we had a very unusual pasuk. Usually it's Hashem speaks to Moshe, and here we have Moshe. Vayomer Moshe, Vaydaber Moshe El Hashem. Moshe spoke to God. But if you look at page 347, which is chapter 27 and pasuk Tezayin 16, and Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, what does he ask him? So there's two booklets. So one of them has page 347. You see, and it says over there that Moshe Rabbeinu says, Yifkaid Hashem Elikei HaRuchais L'chol Basar. Moshe spoke to Hashem, and he says, May Hashem, God of the spirits of all flesh, what should he do? He should appoint a man over the congregation. And we said, what does this mean, God of the spirits of all flesh? What kind of a language is that Moshe Rabbeinu is using to describe Hashem? All he wants is to know who is the next leader. So let me see. I want to just show you. Go into the Rashi. Let's see. He says 16. You see Rashi 16. Yifkaid Hashem. May Hashem, God of the spirits of all flesh. He says, Kevan Shashama, Moshe, once Moshe Rabbeinu heard, Sha'amar Lehamakim, that Hashem said to him, Ten Nachalas, Tzlafchad Lebnoisav, give Tzlafchad's inheritance to his daughters. Amar, he said, Higia Shah, the time has come, She'etba Tzracha, that I should claim what I need. In other words, I should think of my family, as we said, that what should happen, that my sons should inherit my high position. And that's when Hashem said, No, that's not what has entered my mind. He says, Kedai hu Yehoshua, little schar shimushai, Yeshua is worthy to take the reward and to be the one who will be instead of you. Go on to the next page. And why? What was so special about Yehoshua? So first he says, Shalaymash mitaycha ayel, because he did not depart from the tent. We know he was such a devoted student. He was always there at Moshe Rabbeinu's side. Do you remember when Moshe Rabbeinu went up on Har Sinai? Do you remember how everybody was partying at the end, making the golden calf? And Yehoshua was oblivious. He wasn't even aware. Why? Because he was sitting at the edge of the border, the closest where he was allowed to go, and he was just learning and waiting, and he wasn't with anybody, just waiting for Moshe to come down. And this is what he was the entire time, always as close as possible to Moshe, and literally not even knowing what's going on around him, so to speak, except for what Moshe wanted from him. Now, and it's a very cute thing, the Gemara gives an analogy. It says, he who grows the fig tree shall eat its fruit. So that's Yeshua's special, unique, you know, who guards the fig tree, he shall eat its fruit. Okay, now what is Elikei HaRuchais? That's what we asked originally. So he says, Lama Ne'emar. So it says, Amar Lefanav, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Goloi Lefanav Daitai Shel Kol Echad VeEchad. The personality of each individual is revealed before you, and as we know, Ve'einan Doimin Zeh LaZeh, they do not resemble each other. So what does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, Mana Aleihem Manhig, appoint a leader on them, Sheyehei Soivel Kol Echad VeEchad, who can put up with each individual Lefi Daitai, according to his personality. Now, we know this is one of the most difficult, challenging things, never mind the leader over hundreds of thousands of people. We're talking about, even for us, the few people that we know, how difficult it is for us to get along. And we see something here quite magnificent. Moshe Rabbeinu was so concerned about the people. What he wanted, he didn't just want any leader. What does that mean by any leader? He didn't just want somebody who has a great spiritual greatness, or, you know, is a great military leader, or a great political leader, or, you know, brilliant. That wasn't enough. He needed somebody who would understand the people. And this, as you can see, is one of the key ingredients, what differentiates a great person from a leader. Is somebody who understands the people and can relate to each and every one. And that's a very, very difficult thing. Who is the one who will know that about somebody? Only Hashem. Because only Hashem knows the inner makings of the person and the real abilities of the person. Now, it sounds almost like an impossible task, and to a certain extent it is, obviously. And the truth is, the reason I say that it is impossible, because it's really not of a normal human ability. This was an ability that Moshe Rabbeinu was given as a gift, and Yahushua was given as a gift, because they were willing to shoulder the responsibility of the people. So it actually goes two ways. On the one hand, they have to have something in them that makes them capable. On the other hand, once they take upon themselves the responsibility, Hashem does gift them with more insight, right? More insight and more, not insight, it's, I don't know what the word is, but that ability to connect and to understand everybody. And that's what happened to Yahushua. Now the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh takes it even a step deeper. And he says that it's even deeper than that. It's not just an understanding or an emotional way of relating, which is also big. It's also a spiritual connection. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, had a special neshama. It's called the neshama of Moshe. It's hard for us to understand what that means. But Moshe Rabbeinu had, it says, a neshama which was similar to the neshama of Adam HaRishon. We all understand Adam HaRishon is the first man that was created. And incorporated within the neshama of Adam HaRishon are the neshamas of all people that live until the end of time. And it says that Moshe Rabbeinu had that capacity where all of the neshamas of the Jewish people had almost, it's not just a connection, but almost were contained within the neshama of Moshe, and therefore he related to the people spiritually as well. It was like he felt instinctively their needs, their wants, their pull, how they can grow, how they connect to Hashem. And this was something which the leader of the generation afterwards inherited. Moshe had it the most. What Moshe had, nobody got on that level. And yet, Yahushua, that's why he's asking the God of all spirits of all flesh, Yahushua was also given that. And a fascinating thing also the Aruch Chaim says that it's time for, it's almost, not yet, but almost time for Moshe to pass away. Now, we all know, we're not given a choice. You know, we're given a certain amount of years of our life. And when it's time to pass away, as we say, we're born against our will and we pass away against our will, right? That's, we're not given a choice. However, it says, with tzaddikim, especially because they shoulder not just the responsibility, but they shoulder, so to speak, the needs of the people, they almost have a little bit of a say as far as when they pass away. Meaning to say, obviously, Hashem decides, but it's like Hashem asks them, I guess in a sense, almost out of deference, and they agree to pass away. Now, on one level, it's nice for them because now they can remove themselves from the physical constraints and be close to Hashem, right? That's what they aspire to. However, they're also filled with that feeling of connection and responsibility. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu initially, when it was coming almost close, as we said at the beginning, Hashem was telling Moshe, you know, just like Aaron passed away, you'll have the same type of death. So Moshe was a bit hesitant, and he said, no, I'm not ready to pass away. Why? Two reasons. Well, he was still hoping, and, you know, miraculously he's going to go into the land of Israel, which wasn't going to happen. But the other thing was, who's going to lead the Jewish people? So once Hashem tells him that Yeshua will lead the people and you have the ability to give him what he needs, in other words, that spiritual greatness, Moshe said, okay, I can pass away. So here we see Moshe almost gives Hashem permission, like, okay, I accept that my time has come, and that's when Hashem is able, so to speak, to take Moshe from the world, because Moshe doesn't leave and incomplete. You know, he doesn't leave the world bereft and empty and leaderless. So that's a very big part of it. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, now, there was one more thing, two more questions that we had when we read the Psukim. Do you remember there was an interesting thing? There was a few doubles and one contradiction. So one thing that was double, if you look at the next Pasuk Yitzayin, Moshe Rabbeinu describes the leader, what type of leader, Asher Yetze Lifneihem, who shall go out before them, V'asher Yavai Lifneihem, and who will come in before them. And then it says, V'asher Yetzeim, and who will take them out, V'asher Yeviim, and who will bring them in. Stubble, what's going on? Right? Is he the one takes them out, brings them in, takes them, what's going on here? And then he says, then they won't be like a sheep that has no shepherd. So Rashi says like this, if you look in Rashi 17, he says, what's this double? So first of all, this we did mention, I won't read this long one. Rashi says that the difference between the leader, the Jewish leader, and other leaders, especially militarily, is that our leaders don't just sit, you know, in a remote control, you know, like somewhere in the office and send the troops out. The leaders of the Jewish people actually led their troops in battle and put themselves into danger. So that's what it means that I will go, that this leader is going to go out. In other words, he's going out with his people to war. Okay, but then if you look at the next Rashi, like the little one, it says, V'asher Yaitziyim. So because why is it double? So he says, Bizchuyosav, through his merits. So here we're talking about that he leads them in battle, it's true. So he sits on his, you know, on his horse, on his whatever, in his tank, and he's the leader, and he's the one that gives the people the strength to fight the war. But it's much deeper than that. He's not just there physically to give them guidance and to inspire them how to fight the war. He is there spiritually, and it is in his merit that they actually succeed. That's a real leader. A leader is one who has the ability to shoulder the, so to speak, the, if you want to say, because even if people are not, so to speak, necessarily merit any miracles, but in his chus they will be, and that's what the leader is. So that's a very important thing. And then it says, Vasher Yeviim, again, so he takes them out through his merit, and he brings them in through his merit. And then Rashi says, alternatively, who shall bring them in means, Shalai Sasalai, that you, if you go to page 349, that you shall not do for him as you did for me. Moshe is speaking very strongly to Hashem. And he's saying to Hashem, you know, you made me the leader to take them out of Egypt, but you don't let me bring them into the land of Israel. Please don't do that to the next leader. Let him at least have the merit to lead them properly to true victory and to really be able to settle. And that's what he's begging Hashem. So that's what he means by that part. It's very interesting. Okay, there was another very nice, interesting thing about this, the Kli Yakar. So the Kli Yakar actually has a whole thing, and he has two different ways of explaining. Actually, that was more the Yad Chai thing. Yeah, but even this part, he said something very interesting. He says, we asked another, and I'll just tell you. The other question was, remember it says that you should put your hand. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to put his hands on Yeshua. And then later, it's one hand, and later it says he put both hands. And there's a big question, what does it mean? One hand or two hands? And why does one hand? So the Kli Yakar has a very fascinating thing. And he says, and we know this, that in Jewish leadership, there's two parts. Sometimes we divide it, but sometimes the same leader has to shoulder both. What are the two parts? One part is the political leadership, you know, the military, the social, and the other is the spiritual. And as a Jewish leader, they're equally important, and the spiritual sometimes even more important. What does the spiritual leadership mean? It means that when you lead the people, you actually inspire them to do Torah mitzvahs, right? That's the idea. You guide them. and you inspire them, and you actually don't just inspire, but in sometimes you compel them, right? As we know, in when the Jews live in the land of Israel, we have a whole set of courts and justices, and you know, you have to keep the halacha. You can't just do what you want. That's not how it works. So very interesting, the Kli Yakar says, when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs over there, a leader actually forces the people. What does it mean, forces? It doesn't mean it comes down harshly, but it means forces that he doesn't have a choice because it's not his laws, it's Hashem's laws, right? So he can't say, okay, today you don't have to keep Shabbos, or today you don't have to keep kosher, or, you know, whatever you're in the mood of. It's not up to him. It's up because he's following Hashem's law. But when it comes to the social and the political, so there, he can be a little bit more flexible because some things human beings can decide. You know, what's right today, what's right for this individual. There he can be more flexible. And that's what the Psukim are saying over here. The Psukim are telling us that in one area, it's you take them out and you bring them in, force. You do, you know, they have to say what, they have to do what you say when it comes to interpreting Hashem's law. But when it comes to social things, there a true leader leads and guides with one hand. One hand meaning with a hand that brings close. Not as much as we say, you know, we say, yemin mikareves, with the right hand you bring close, and with the left hand you push away, with the weaker hand. So here Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, don't forget that there is this concept, as we mentioned before, that a leader has to understand the people and has to sometimes modify and adjust and be flexible. And that's why we have the double. And that's why it's two hands when it comes to the Torah mitzvahs part, but it's one hand when it comes to all the rest. So it's quite a beautiful thing. And what is interesting is, as I said, later on in history, you find that it was mainly divided because there was like the Sanhedrin and there was the king. So the Sanhedrin was more the part, or the Navi, the prophet. He was more the one that led the people spiritually. The king was more the political leader. And yet over here, especially with Moshe and with Yehoshua, they assumed total leadership. And therefore they had to incorporate both, which is very difficult. It's difficult meaning to say that it's actually sometimes a bit contradictory in the person themselves. In contradictory needs, as we can see, you know, to understand somebody is different than imposing a law that you didn't make up. So fascinating. What's beautiful is you see how great these leaders were, that they were able to incorporate opposite, almost opposite, so to speak, ways of being. And this is what Moshe and Yeshua both actually had, which is actually incredible. It's actually beautiful. And this is a very big part of this part. So this part of the Chumash shows us, again, as this concept of leadership, the love of Moshe Rabbeinu, and also how Hashem is so involved and so cares about the Jewish people that he's going to ensure that they have somebody to truly take care of them. Okay, so that's that part. And one more beautiful thing I want to show you. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is told by Hashem that he should put, we said, V'nasata, on page 350, it's Pasuk Chof, V'nasata mehoitcha alav, right? You shall place of your splendor upon him. And that's what we mentioned before. That's his spiritual splendor. Do you remember? And it says a very interesting thing. And then it says, then it says, before Elazar HaKayin, he's going to stand. And he's going to have to ask the Urim V'Tumim. And actually, it says an interesting thing that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he appointed Yehoshua, he showed everybody that Yehoshua was the leader already. Like, he didn't like say, he will be the leader after I pass away. But he immediately gave him this translator, this person who would help him teach. So Yehoshua immediately began to teach so that people shouldn't say later, in front of Moshe, you didn't dare open your mouth. Only now you open your mouth. In other words, to instill the respect of the people towards Yehoshua, even in front of Moshe, which will help. But another very important thing also, why Elazar plays a role. Do you remember Moshe Rabbeinu asked for his family? This is his nephew. So here Hashem is saying to him, no, your sons are not going to be the next leader. But your nephew does play a big role, because we know that the king, Yeshua, who is like a king, he's not an actual king, but he's like a king, he has to defer to the Kohen Gadol, right? Because then they ask the breastplate. So giving also honor and accord to Moshe Rabbeinu's family, which is also very beautiful. And then the last thing I wanted to show you says a very interesting thing, that when Hashem said, "V'nasata mehoitcha," you shall put from your glory, from your splendor. So what? And we said Moshe Rabbeinu is like a sun. Yeshua is compared to the moon. It's an interesting thing. So he's a lot less than Moshe. But fascinatingly, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, the last Pasuk of this part, page 351, and as we said, Vayismaych es yadav olav, that you shall put your, right, and he actually did put both of his hands, olav, as we said, it's not one hand, but both hands. And what does Rashi say beautifully? If you look at Rashi 23, Ba'ayin Yafa, it's page 351, right? Ba'ayin Yafa, he gave it to him with generously, much more than he had been commanded. In other words, Moshe gave of his greatness, of his spiritual whatever, to Yeshua more than he was commanded. Shakadosh Baruch Hu Amar Lai V'samachtes Yotcha. Hashem said, lean your hand, using the singular. V'hu Asa B'shtei Yadav. But he did it with both his hands. And he made Yeshua Kikli Malei V'gadosh, like a vessel which is full and brimming over, Umilu Chachmasai, and filled him with his wisdom, Ba'ayin Yafa, generously. Now this sounds, okay, well, why not, right? Doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu want the best for the Jewish people? But again, putting into context, what just happened here? What did Moshe originally want? His own son, right? And here, what is he being told? It's not your son, it's Yeshua. And at the same time, immediately, without any hesitation, Moshe Rabbeinu is able not just to give over the leadership, not just to do what Hashem says properly, but even more, right? Which is unbelievable. Again, showing the incredible depth of greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, of what our leaders are and were. Like, it's amazing. And this is all because of his love of the Jewish people, that he just wants the best and the most for them. So it's not about him, it's about them. And that's what's amazing. It's actually quite beautiful. And this is what he gave Yeshua. And it's an interesting thing. The Gemara says, the language is used that Moshe Rabbeinu is like the sun and Yeshua is like the moon. And it's a little bit embarrassing for Yeshua. That's what, like, the Gemara puts a comment like, so he's so much less than Moshe. But there's many different explanations given about that. And one explanation is given is, what's wrong? I mean, that's a fact that Moshe was greater. It's not Yeshua's choice. But one thing I saw, a beautiful thing, it says that Yeshua being the moon means the moon reflects the light of the sun. So a very interesting thing. What Yeshua should have done was, yes, initially he reflected the light of Moshe, but what the problem was, that he didn't grow from there. He should have afterwards a little bit had his own initiative and been more. So that's one thing that could be a little bit of a, you know, so to speak, a deficiency on the part of Yeshua. But another thing it says in the Gemara means really for the people around, not Yeshua and Moshe. Unfortunately, the sages of the time, it says when Moshe Rabbeinu was choosing Yeshua, they weren't so excited. Well, it makes sense, I mean, for the people, because how, you know, once you have, it's so interesting, because not only, even if it was, he wasn't greater or less great, once you connect to somebody, you know, it's very hard to replace. So to them, it was like Moshe was their leader. He's been through thick and thin with them. He did everything for them. So it's hard for them. But not only that, some of them were a little bit, how do you say, I don't know what the word is, when somebody gets a bit older and they become a little bit critical and a little bit cynical, maybe that's the word. So therefore, they said they didn't feel the same way towards Yeshua as they had felt initially towards Moshe. And they actually felt embarrassed by it. They themselves reflected and said, why don't we feel that same deference? It's a lack in us. It's not a lack in the leader, it's a lack in us. It's because we have become cynical. So it's actually also a very powerful lesson for us sometimes when we meet people and we find that we don't have that measure of respect. Sometimes it's not because they don't deserve the respect, but it's more because of different feelings that we have. So that's also part of what the Chachamim discuss. Very interesting. All the different things. Anyways, Yeshua here is established. He's going to be the next leader, and he will definitely be the one to take them in to the land of Israel. The next part of this Chumash comes to the next part. I want us to see one thing. We're going to see something very, very interesting. Let me just make sure I didn't miss anything important. Okay. Yeah. Okay, and we did mention this idea that Yeshua had to be a little bit less than Moshe in order to take the people into the land of Israel, so that the people, because Moshe, people couldn't even go near. When we compare him to the sun, we mean literally. People were like, he was so bright, so high spiritually, that people couldn't even approach him. And what Hashem wanted was that for the leader that took them into the land of Israel, he should be a more approachable leader, and also a leader who can relate to this world, because that's what this is about now. Now we're settling in the land. And also, as we said, Hashem didn't want that when they entered the land of Israel, it should be like the sun, like Moshe Rabbeinu coming in, and all the enemies just run, you know, because, which would be really nice, but that's not the way Hashem wanted. He wanted it to be, in a sense, more natural, the more normal way, which is the way that you fight a war and you're successful, because also that gives us the ability to reflect and to see that we can do it. Because had Moshe brought them in, we would have said, well, we can't, we don't have Moshe. But Hashem said, yeah, even Yahshua, I mean, even Yahshua is great also, but normal people, so to speak, you can enter, you can fight the wars, and I will be with you. And it will be natural and supernatural at the same time, so to speak. And that's a very important lesson for us, that we have to realize that even if we're not on the highest and the greatest levels, Hashem will definitely lead us and help us and be with us and guide us into the land of Israel. Now, on the next part of your thing, you see what's the next topic. That's the end of this topic. Then the Chumash goes into, in the next chapter, a very famous chapter. It's not so exciting. We're not going to do so many of the psukim inside, but I don't know if you see it says page 2, page 352. I don't know if it's the next booklet, maybe. Do you have another booklet under page 352? Same thing? Okay, I don't know. Anyways, so Vizier has like this. Here we're going to have a topic which looks, the end of Parshas Pinchas is actually famous. For people who go to shul on Yontif, it's a lot of the reading of the Torah of the Yontifs, because it talks about the sacrifices that they used to bring in the Beis HaMikdash on the different Yomim Tovim. So a lot of it is taken from this part. But before they get to the actual specific sacrifices of the Yontifs, it has a sacrifice of Shabbos, but before that, it has what we call the Karban Tamid. Now, the Karban Tamid is one of the most famous sacrifices. That's the sacrifice, Tamid means constant, right? That's the sacrifice that was brought every single day, twice a day, once in the morning and once in the evening. Many people say this paragraph in davening every day before, like, it's called Karbanis, it's that part of davening after Brachas, because this is what they used to bring in the Beis HaMikdash every morning and every afternoon. That's why we have the davening of Shachris and the davening of Mincha corresponding to the two Karbanis, the Karban Tamid, which was really one of the main services of the Jewish people, brought on behalf, it was called a communal offering, brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people every single day. This was one of these, how do you say it, consistent, continuous, non-stop. And when it stopped, it was a big tragedy, actually, when the Karban Tamid was stopped at the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, or just before. And this was like a very, very big part of the service, and it provided everything, connection, atonement, in a general way, for the entire Jewish people.
Did it keep burning?
Okay, so, yeah, so the afternoon one burned through the night, and that's why we have Ma'ariv. So that's where the Tefillah of Ma'ariv comes from. But the morning one, no, I think it just, they brought it, and then, yeah, and then after, yeah, it's a fascinating thing. So just a few psukim I want to show you, and I'll show you a few beautiful lessons from this whole concept. Because I know we don't have this, so it sounds like nothing to do with us. But again, reminding, we do have this, because this is what our davening of Shemayna Esrei of twice a day corresponds to this specific carbon that they used to bring. So it says, Vayidabra Hashem el Moshe l'Emor, and Hashem, this is Perek Chavches, chapter 28, and Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Tzaves b'nei Yisrael, command the Jewish people, v'yamarta aleihem, and say to them, Es karbani, my offering, lachmi, my food, l'ishai, for my fires, reyach nichaychi, my satisfying aroma, Tishmeru, you shall keep, like in other words, you shall guard and make sure to keep. See, that's on the next booklet, maybe 353, Lahakriv li b'mayadai, to offer to me in its appointed time. And good. And he gives specifics. But before we go, I wanted to show you something very cute. Look at the first, going back to the first Rashi, so the page before, as we say, look at what he says. Tzav es b'nei Yisrael, command the children of Israel. So he says, what's the connection? Now, what's the flow from appointing Yahshua, right, and to this, right? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had spoken to Hashem, I want a leader, and now we're talking about the sacrifices. And there's another interesting question, why are we bringing the sacrifices here? They brought these sacrifices in the desert, and it's not as if this is new. But why is it being brought all of a sudden here at the end? So let me show you something. So he says, Ma amar lamayla, what has been stated above? Yifkay Hashem, may Hashem, God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint, as we said. Amar leya kadosh baruch hu. So Hashem said to Moshe, Ad sha'ata mitzaveni al banai, rather, or until you command me about my children, because you remember how it said it very harshly, Vayedaber Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Hashem like he was giving him instruction. So Hashem says, hey, putting aside what you want for my children, so what does he say? Tziva es banai alai, command my children about me. Forget what I have to do for my children. What about what my children's obligations are to me? That's what Hashem says to Moshe. He says, and he gives a mashal. It's an analogy to a daughter of a king that Shahaisa Nifteres Mina'ilam, who was departing from the world. In other words, she was dying. Vahaisa Mifakedes Labaila, and she was giving instructions to her husband, Albaneha, regarding her children. Now, let me just show you. If you go down, it'll tell you more of the analogy. So if you look at number 5, it says like this. The Medrash continues. So she knows she's going to pass away and she's leaving her children behind. So she tells her husband, she's trying to give him instruction. She says to him, I beseech you, please take care of my children. He said to her, rather than you commanding me about my children, command my children about me, that they not disobey me and that they treat me disrespectfully. So did the Holy One, blessed be He, say to Moshe, rather than you commanding me about my children, command my children about me, that they not treat me disrespectfully and that they not replace me, my honor, with foreign gods. In other words, what Hashem is saying to Moshe, it's true. You should be worried about the Jewish people and about who's going to take care of them, and that Hashem should be there for them. But you know, your job is to tell the Jewish people to keep up their connection with me and to follow my commands, right? It's a funny kind of a conversation, but it's a very interesting thing. It's almost like Hashem is putting Moshe in his place, but the idea being, as we know, this is a two-way relationship here, right? So Hashem is going to take care of us. He'll give us a good leader. He'll be with us when we need him. But don't forget, we also have responsibilities. We also have obligations. And part of those obligations are actually encapsulated in this concept of the Karban Tamid. Why? So let's just say two things, just very quickly, we can all understand. What does a Karban Tamid mean? So before the concept of Karban, even the word Tamid, constant, consistent, we all know that one of the most challenging things about a relationship is the consistency, because many things happen. First of all, we tend to take somebody who's around all the time for granted. You know, you just expect them to always be there. What ends up happening is, not intentionally, but you don't have the same level of respect. When you have somebody around all the time, there's not that same level, measure of respect, of honor, of feeling of, you don't cherish it as much because you just take it for granted, right? That's what happens. The other thing that's also challenging is consistency itself is challenging. So what happens if you expect somebody to be there? So when something is consistent, what tends to happen is that we become less consistent almost because we neglect. We will become neglectful. So consistency itself is a challenge to begin with for us people. Hashem made us like that. It's hard. I mean, we do get into habits, so that becomes okay. But a habit is not what we want here. We don't want to just do things by, you know, automatic, right? We want to do things that we feel, we should feel, we should want, we should have a chayis, right? So it's hard to do something consistently and with feeling. It doesn't really go so well together. Shabbos is quite a treasure because it comes once a week. Yom Tov is even more because it comes so, you know, every day you wake up, Monday morning is just Monday morning. Nobody's excited about Monday morning, but that's because it's just constant, right? Every day, the weekdays, it's just, you know, I have to do the same thing over and over. So here, the Karban Tamid shows us something unbelievable. Many lessons. First of all, consistency itself is extremely important. Consistency, but it should be Tamid with Karban. Karban, close. With that feeling that every time we do even the same thing we did yesterday, we're coming closer. It's something deeper. It's something more meaningful. So that's so important for us. The other thing is also not to take it for granted ever, but the consistency should cause us to cherish it more, to come in a sense where we say, wow, we have the opportunity again. We have the opportunity again. We have the opportunity again. And that's really, as we say, it's not easy. That's why it's interesting. There's I think it's very easy to see the comparison between this and davening, because opening up the siddur, saying the same words every single day, it's not so inspiring. You know, you open up and you say Shema Esrei, and I've said it just a few hours ago and a few hours ago, right? And here we see, we show that no, this is really one of the greatest services is the service of the Karvan Tamid, because this is what ensures our closeness. We all know it's the only way to make sure that we continuously, consistently really maintain the relationship is by that constant. So that's a very big one, very, very big one. But again, I just want to show you just a few little Rashis here, and then I'll show you something, two beautiful other ideas. Let me just see from which one I wanted to see, from which of the psukim. Okay, it just says, you know, that we bring it, b'mayaday, in its appointed time, b'chol yayim, on every day, it is the appointed time, so that's what it means. And then what is the carbon? The carbon, it says, kvasim b'nei, you see, it says, v'yamarta lahem zeha isha shetakrivu l'Hashem, and you shall say to them, this is the fire offering that you are to offer to Hashem. Again, interesting, it uses the word fire offering, because and the concept for us is that we have to bring ourselves close to Hashem with a fire. It's not just, you know, as a robot. There's got to be a fire. Anyways, but obviously over here we're talking about a real fire. And what do we bring? Kvasim b'nei shana tmimim, right? It should be male lambs in their first year, unblemished. Shnayim layayim, two per day. With one, in other words, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Ayla tamid, as a continual ayla offering. There was one Rashi that I wanted to see. Okay, these are all the psukim that tell us about it. Just want to see the last. I think maybe it's the last one. Yeah, just look at the last. If you go to page 355, these are psukim that we do say in davening, but it just talks about the carbon. It says on page 355. Yeah, it says in Pasuk Ches in verse 8, Ve'es hakeves hasheni ta'aseh bein ha'arbayim, right? So the first one we bring in the morning, and the second one we bring in the afternoon. It's an interesting word, bein ha'arbayim. Do you see that? Like between the erevs. It's a cute lashon. Anyway, so it's in the afternoon. Kiminchas ha'baiker, just like the meal offering of the morning. Ukiniskai, and its libation, right? Because you also pour the wine. Ta'aseh, you shall make. Ishei reyach nichayach la'Hashem, a fire offering for a satisfying aroma to Hashem. So Rashi says, reyach nichayach, nachas ruach lefanai, a source of contentment before me. Sha'amarti, for I said, in other words, that I commanded you to bring it, v'naaseh ritzayni, and my will was done. This is a very important thing, because we see here that the nachas ruach, you know, when we all know, you know, you bring, you know, we want nachas and we want to bring nachas to others. What is the thing that provides Hashem with nachas from us? It is when we do what He commands consistently every day. Do you see? Not big things. We're not talking about, you know, the biggest thing. We're talking one lamb every morning, one lamb every afternoon. You know, that one for the whole nation, right? It's small, consistent little things that we do because Hashem said so. That's the nachas ruach. Because I command it, and you do. And you do it with the fire, with the understanding that you're coming closer to Hashem. So it's a very powerful thing. Now, I want to see two beautiful ideas from here. So one thing that I think you have in front of you, if I'm not mistaken, what's the next page after this? Do you have the Nesivas Shalem? Yeah, beautiful. So we won't do the whole thing inside because it will take too long. But I just want to show you. He asks beautiful question. I'll do a few lines and I'll show you. I'll see from where I should have bracketed. Okay, so he asks a few questions, like as we said before, why are we being commanded now? What's the whole idea of what's the connection between the appointment of Yahushua to these sacrifices? And he says, the idea is, let me just see, if you look at the second paragraph. You see, it says v'yesh loymar in the first column, the second paragraph. V'yesh loymar ha'inyan al pi mashikasov be sefer hakadosh. Sorry, be sefer hakadosh noyem eli melech. from Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk. Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk explains a beautiful idea. And he says, Shebechol dar vadar, in every single generation, yesh mitzvah meyuchedes, there is a specific mitzvah, sh'al klal Yisrael letakein b'meyuchad b'dar zeh, that the Jewish people have specifically to fix, to atone, or to do in a greater measure in that generation. Means, we're simple people, so we don't know, but every generation has a mitzvah which is connected to that generation, more than to other generations. The tzaddikim of the generation, they're aware. So he says like this, what's like, for example, and he gives an example. He says that at the time of, let me just see, in Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk was tzitzis. He knew that it was the mitzvah of tzitzis, but anyway, let me just see if he says what. Okay, and he says, generally, we know that the world stands on three things, on Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim, right? That's the general thing that the whole world stands on, which means that a mitzvah that has to do with at least one of those three pillars is what's going to be the mitzvah of the generation, so to speak. And he says, if you think about the generation that was in the desert, what was the column of the three columns that you would think that they would have been most emphasizing? If you think about Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim, which one in the desert would they have been most involved in? Torah. First of all, exactly. Because first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that got the Torah, and he's the one that was able to impart and teach to the generation that was in the desert, and that's also why they were in the desert and getting the man, so that they should be able to just devote themselves to learning Torah, 100%. So that was what we call Dor Deya, the generation of knowledge, who were immersed in Torah. Now Yehoshua is taking over. They're going to go into the land of Israel. And what did we say? That's a very different type of thing. What of the three pillars, so it could be either of two, but which one maybe would be the next thing that would be emphasized in the time of Yehoshua? It says the Avodah. Now, what is Avodah? So Avodah in the old times meant the service of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. The truth is, one of the main reasons they were entering the land of Israel was in order to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash, right? And to be able to bring up the sacrifices and serve Hashem there. But we all know that the Avodah column is not just the Karbanis. It is Karbanis, but it's not just, because Karbanis mean a lot more. The Avodah column also means the concept of Tefillah. That's what we do instead of the Karbanis, right? And what is this Avodah? So he says a very beautiful idea. Avodah means, actually, if you just translate, what is the word if you translate Avodah? Work. Okay, work. When we say that you have work to do, right? If you use it in the, a little bit of a, I don't know, more than just like, just, when somebody says, I have work to do, what does it mean, usually? Important, like hard things, right? When you say work, like what, I think the imagery is like, it's something that's a little bit difficult for you. We don't say, I have work to do when you're taking a walk with my friend. I'm taking a walk, I'm going out for coffee. That's not called work to do. Work to do is like when something's like we don't really want to do it, then we got to do it. Exactly. That's when you have to push yourself. That's Avodah. So he says Avodah means when a person has to go a little bit beyond what they're exactly, what they're used to, what they enjoy, what they like, what they feel comfortable, what they feel good at. That's Avodah. That's work, right? That's the service that we're talking about. So he says when the Jewish people are going, that's why it's connected to appointments of Yeshua. Now they're going to enter the land of Israel. Now they're going to have to do things and get involved with many things that not necessarily are they so comfortable with. There's many foreign things that they're going to have to do, and that's the Avodah that we're talking about here. So he says, I just want to see.
So the Avodah was actually working, but not the Avodah of the...
So it's actually, it is both. So it's interesting, Sheila, because I think what it means is that the Avodah is the Karbanis and the Tefillah, but what does that signify? What does that incorporate? That incorporates the idea of going beyond yourself. That's what a Karban is, because a Karban is bringing yourself close to God, which means growing, right?
Getting dressed and going to shul.
Exactly. when it's raining, when it's hot, when it's cold. Exactly. That's the idea. So the idea is to do more than what we're comfortable. That's what a korban is. A korban is you're putting yourself on the mizbeach, so to speak. You're devoting yourself to something that you don't necessarily want to do, right? That's a korban. That's making yourself a korban, right? But we know that's the best way, because we afterwards, we feel, you know how you feel after you've done something that you didn't really want to do, but you knew was the right thing. There's no greater feeling than after that. And you do feel closer. And this is the avaida, so to speak, that we're talking about over here. And he says,
this concept of Torah,
yeah,
in the wilderness. Moshe was writing the Torah. How did the people actually practice the Torah?
Okay, so what do you mean by practice?
Did they learn the Torah with him?
Okay, so very interesting. It seems that in the desert, what was happening, like you think, I think, you know, we think of it as traveling. There was very little traveling because, like, for 18 years, they were in one place. If you imagine, they had the mon every day. Do you remember we said the water, the wells of Miriam made, like, these streams going through? They were like this, it was like this encampment of, I don't know, the most beautiful place in the world almost, in the desert. That's what it was. Things even grew right near where the well was. And they lived these peaceful, idyllic lives. But what were they doing all day? Learning. It says that Moshe taught Yahshua, Yahshua taught the elders, and the elders would go around and they would have shiurim. I mean, you can join a shiur. It was unbelievable. It was really
like a wonderful life.
It sounds exactly. No laundry to do. That was it. It was there. It's amazing. Imagine. But seriously, the clouds of glory flattened everything and surrounded them, made the temperature exactly right. It says, not too hot, not too cold. Everything was like just idyllic. And they were able, because they needed that grounding. Because in order to go and to do the Aveda, you have to learn. That's why it's a good idea to come on a Monday morning and learn. And then we can do the Aveda after. Without the learning, you can't. It doesn't work. Without the inspiration first. But the goal is really to go into the normal, you know, as we say, and there to actually apply what we're learning, so to speak. And that ability to handle things the right way. So this is, Sylvia, this is the Aveda. That's the Torah, and then we have the Aveda. And obviously the Gemilas Chasadim follows right away. Obviously that also gets incorporated, because when we do Aveda, what the Aveda means, that we grow beyond ourselves. And when we grow beyond ourselves, obviously immediately it's very easy for us, and it makes it possible for us to notice another. It's when we're self-absorbed that we don't know the needs of another. So as soon as we start to grow, the true Torah way, because, you know, we always say Aveda, some people think Aveda, you know, like meditation and going to, I don't know, India. No, that's not the Torah way. Torah doesn't tell us to go and separate from the world. We learn, but then we have to interact with other people and we have to give to other people, right? So that's the Gemilas Chasadim aspect. But over here, as he says, I just want to see if I'm missing any part of this. So that's what he says. He says, Tzaves B'nei Yisrael. That's what Hashem says, command. And what he means by that is, I'm giving them the strength to be able to do this Aveda. I promise, you know, that I'm going to give them that strength. And that's why he also uses this beautiful language. This is my carbon, my lachmi, my bread, my fire, my nachas, because it's the Aveda, it's the hard work that we put in. That's what gives Hashem the greatest nachas and makes us closest to Hashem. Just want to see if there was anything else over here that we're missing. Okay, so that's why he says also that, and we know that was for that time they were able to bring the actual sacrifices, but now we don't. Now we can serve Hashem only with the davening, and that's what we do. We try to do with the davening is to feel that closeness to Hashem and to think about and to meditate, so to speak, on how we're going to do that and how we can, what our purpose is in this world, as he says. That's a beautiful thing. He says on the second page, if you look, page Kuf Samach Gimel in the first column, so he says, it says in the pasuk, Tishmeru, right, you shall guard it, Lahakriv li b'mayadai, right, to sacrifice it to me at the right time. So he says, what does that mean? What is Tishmeru? Tishmeru, he says, is Mamtim umitzape masayave. Tishmeru means that you should be anticipating, and this is a very beautiful thing. You should guard. In other words, you should hold it in your mind and be waiting. What should you be anticipating? So he says a very big part of the Avodah is the anticipation that we should all be having for when we will be able to bring the Karbanos again. In other words, that we now, after the time of the destruction, a big part of our life has to be that we should yearn strongly and realize what we truly are missing. Because it's only when we realize what we're missing that we actually can feel that closeness. You see, it's interesting, because if we go about our life and everything is just wonderful and everything's fine and we have everything, well, that shows we're not, there's no missing of God. That's terrible. So this is the Aveda of the Golos, of our time, he says. What's our time? Our time is the yearning. And he says a beautiful, interesting story. He says of, a great Rebbe, that somebody was coming and he had a lot of, some difficulties that he was going through, and he was kvetching, and he was kvetching, and he could see that the Rebbe wasn't really getting so moved, like he wasn't getting so, he didn't like feel so compassionate. And after a while he said, but Rebbe, don't you realize I'm going through such a hard time? And the Rebbe says, yeah, I hear you, but you know, in all of your complaints, one thing I didn't hear you complain about, I didn't hear you complain that you couldn't bring the Karban Tumid today. And what did he mean by that? He meant, you're forgetting why you're here in this world. You're here in this world to serve Hashem. And if you don't realize that what's the biggest thing that's missing, of course, when we're not healthy, when we don't have what we need, and when we have all the other things that bother us, it takes us away from our ability to serve Hashem. So that's why we want all those things to be complete. But we have to remember that's why, right? We have to remember that the true thing is the yearning for the time of Mashiach, when we will all be in the land of Israel, where there will be peace, where we will all be able to serve Hashem, where Hashem will be revealed, and we won't have any of these worries. But it's not just that we shouldn't just think about the little worry. I mean, they're not little. Some of them are big worries, but that's not what should be taking over. Rather, what should be taking over is, I want these worries gone so that I can serve Hashem. That's what I'm missing when I have all these other worries. I can't, like we say, I can't help another person when I myself don't feel well, right? So we want to feel well so that we can do what needs to be done. And that's the Avodah, he says, is the yearning for the time that we can again bring the Karbanos and have everything in a clear way, the revelation of Hashem and the clarity. And that's the real Avodah of now. It's a very beautiful idea. And we didn't get to something so magnificent. And I want to, it really applies from last week's parasha. I just want to share a quick thing. Such a beautiful thought that comes to with the idea of davening. You know, last week's parasha, we had the story of Sodom. Hashem destroyed Sodom. And we all know that before he destroyed Sodom, he said, there's a very famous pasuk, he says, am I going to hide from Avraham what I'm about to do? And we know what happens. Hashem tells Avraham what he's about to do. And Avraham davens, right? And he davens, and he davens, and he says, 50 people, you know, all the different numbers, and he goes down. And we all know what happens after. Hashem still destroys Sodom. Avraham daven, 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 daven. Did Hashem listen to his davening? No, didn't do anything. Seems like it was for nothing. Sometimes every morning we open up our siddur, we daven for something, and the next day we daven again, and it seems for nothing. What's fascinating is, the next day Avraham comes to the same place, it says. That's what the psukim describe. And he looks out onto the valley, right? And he sees the fires, right? He sees the cities burning. And it says, Vayashkim, the word that's used is Vayashkim Avraham Babaker. Avraham arose early the next morning and he went out to see and he could see the destruction. And the Mefarshim tell us, what is this Vayashkim Avraham Babaker? That's how we learn that we have to daven Shachris. The Karban Tumid was made later at that time, right? But that's how we learn, because he woke up early, it's from Avraham, he established this davening of Shachris. Such a strange thing. Of all the places that we are basing our davening on, is on Avraham davening in a place that he had been the day before, where he hadn't been answered. He had davened and begged for Hashem to spare all those people, and Hashem destroyed them anyway. It's such a magnificent lesson. It says like this. There's a few beautiful lessons. A, the fact is, you see what Avraham did? He came one day, he's davening, davening, davening. The next day, and he doesn't get answered. Not only doesn't get answered, the place is all burning. And what does he do the next day? Does he sleep in? My davening doesn't help. Forget it. He goes back and he davens. Doesn't matter. I wasn't answered. Hashem didn't, whatever, I don't know why, everything's done exactly the opposite of what I wanted, but he wakes up early the next morning and he's davening. That's one of the most important lessons for us. We daven, we don't see Hashem answering, but we keep davening. Why? For nothing? So it says, no. Hashem actually takes those tefillahs and he holds on to them. He will use them at a later time. We don't know when. And we say a beautiful thing, that when Avraham, I'm skipping a lot, but it's a very magnificent thing, that when Avraham looked out, oh, first of all, that's why we learned it from, because of his emunah, his incredible faith, and not giving up. That in itself is just unbelievable. But when he looked over the fires, and he saw the fires burning up, but what else it says? He saw that Hashem had saved light, right? Because he saved light in the merit of Avraham, and Lot and his two daughters were saved, and we know what comes from them is David HaMelech. So it says that Avraham's tefillah, that he davened for the saving of Sodom. It didn't save Sodom, didn't save Amir, it didn't save those five cities, but what did it, yes, save? It saved David HaMelech. So his tefillahs were answered many generations, so to speak, later. And we have no idea. When we daven, it says beautifully, that's what I think the pre-tzaddik says, the beautiful tzaddikon, when we daven, we don't know for our grandchildren, for our great-grandchildren, not for us, for the future generations, Hashem will hold on to the tefillah, and that's who it will be for. If not for us, and if not in our life. So we wake up every morning, open up our siddur again, with emunah and with betachin, and hopefully Hashem will answer all of our tefillahs, and there should just be, as we say, peace and goodness and everything in the world for all of us. So, yeah.